Hi, my name is Steve Fleming, CEO of River City Bank, which was founded almost 50 years ago. As a leader in a family business myself and a longtime board member for the Capital Region Family Business Center, I understand firsthand how incredibly important family businesses are to our economy and the unique challenges they face in sustaining from generation to generation. I think that you will find this podcast series informative, entertaining, and even humorous at times. That's why our family business, River City Bank, is proud to support this podcast. I hope you enjoy today's episode.
There's always going to be some conflict and people misunderstand each other and then just clear it up. Most of the time, it's so simple. It's just like, oh, I didn't know that. Whatever it is. And just clearing it up before it gets bigger.
Hello, and welcome to A Seat at the Table, Trials and Triumphs of Family Business, brought to you by the Capital Region Family Business Center, helping family businesses to grow and prosper. I'm Natalie Mariani Kling, your host and a fourth-generation family business member. I am so excited to join you around the table for real conversations about what it's like to grow up in, become a part of, and navigate the complexities of a family business. Special thanks to another family business, River City Bank, for their generous support of this program.
On this episode, we speak with Jennifer Carrier-Leduc, fourth generation of her 133-year-old family business, Carrier Family Farms. Jennifer shares how her family has navigated hard conversations, shifting reporting structures within the family, why vulnerability is important in the boardroom, and the value of having their very own family summer camp. Welcome, Jennifer, to the podcast, A Seat at the Table. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So, Jennifer, I'm really excited to talk to you because you beat me in terms of generations. You are a fifth generation, 133-year-old family company, which is awesome. Do you know the stats on like becoming a fifth generation company?
I do. And that's what we're battling constantly. We're battling against the odds, but we got to keep moving forward and figuring it out. So we're very aware of that.
Well, I'm excited to dive into that because just in the little conversations you and I have had already, it is really impressive. And what's amazing about it, and I think this is why we love this topic so much of family businesses, is you always feel like you're kind of reinventing the wheel because in some ways you are from generation to generation. There's still no good formula for the number of owners you're going to have and the dynamics of the group and all of that. So I think there's a lot we can dive into. But before we do, Tell us about Carrier Family Farms, when it was started, and then what does it look like today?
Okay. How much do you want to know and how much time do you have?
Give us a 30,000 foot version.
Okay. So 1890, my great-grandfather Albini Carrier came from Quebec to work in Glenn County. How he knew about that, I cannot tell you, but he made it here, started working in row crops for a local farmer. Fast forward a couple years, ended up marrying the farmer's oldest daughter. So,
which isn't that how it goes?
Right. Like that's so like, I don't want to say cliche, but I mean, it worked out, right?
But it was your great-grandfather, right?
My great-grandfather, yes.
Yeah, so both of our great-grandfathers found the farmer's daughter somewhat appealing.
Right, exactly. They were in the Glen area, Glen County, and right along the Sacramento River. And one of the biggest tasks in that area was to literally, like, clear out the jungle because it's all it was at that point. There was not a lot of farming, so a lot of just land clearing and then row cropping. Fast forward to... and a lot of wheat. There's a lot of family photos with mule-driven carts. Fast forward to when Albini and Rosanna. Rosanna, my great-grandmother, was one of 19 kids. So that's why I have cousins everywhere in this area. And so they had four kids, my grandfather being one of them, Wilfred Carrier. And Wilfred really gravitated towards the farming, and he focused on rice in the 30s. When the Depression happened, from what I understand, there was a lot of bank-owned land available that he was able to acquire. So that was how that happened. So he focused on rice. And then early 60s is when my uncle Herb started with the walnuts. For a very long time, it was my grandfather, Wilfred, my dad, and my uncle Herb who were running. My dad was the rice guy. Herb was the walnut guy. And Wilfred just was rice, but kind of oversaw things. It was like that for many years. And then in the 80s, my cousin Bill came back from college. The story goes, my uncle Herb had just gotten a computer and he asked Bill for some help with the computer and Bill sat down to help him and then he just never got up because they didn't want him. So that's Bill's been there since like since the 80s. And then over time, different family members in and out. And then it wasn't until early 2000s that we really got into processing. So we went from just farming to processing. So we had an in-shell facility of walnuts. And then in mid 2000s, got into the shelling process. So it's still pretty early in that endeavor in the whole scheme of things. But now we're at about, I think we have 120 plus employees and there's 7 family members now.
And 7 current owners or 7 family members in the business?
7 family members in the business. As far as owners, there's 22.
So the company is now being run mostly by the 5th generation and you as a 4th generation. Is that right?
Well, Bill is 4th generation. He's a CEO. And so he and I are the only Gen 4 still there. And then the 5th generation is kind of in that transition time period.
And so how has that transition gone? Because it seems like there was, as you were saying, kind of 3 primary family members running it for a few decades. And now it's really made this transition into a 4th, 5th generation led company. How has that gone? Because imagining you have a lot of those people as direct cousins, and that's a really different dynamic than running it with your siblings or your parents. How's that gone for you?
Any transition is always a challenge, right? Like we've got the pressure to, like, as my dad says, it's your guys's, don't mess it up. But he uses a different word. which is, you know, kind of tongue in cheek, but at the same time, there's a lot of pressure, right? So it's never going to be perfect. And no family is immune to the challenges of growth and change and everything that all the emotions that come along with that. What we've really started doing in the last few years is focusing on the smart side, like everything but the numbers, right? Side, right? The interpersonal communication, all the emotions and stuff that come along with changes and family and business and everything. So that's what we really keep trying to do just to stay on top of it. It's, again, it's not perfect. It's not the only answer, but it helps to have those tough conversations when things change and when dynamics of the business change.
Hey, you said something to me about unhooking the trailer. What does that mean to you?
So that came up at a recent meeting with my generation where there's a lot of stuff from the past, whether it's interpersonal relationship challenges or things that have just kind of, we weren't involved with in the past, but, you know, just hearing stories or whatever of challenges that, again, no one's immune to the challenges, right? So we want to find a way to move forward. So that was just the analogy that we came up with, is like, there's a lot of heaviness with, I don't know how to say it, but like with a lot of challenges from the past, right? So what are we putting in the trailer? Let's all put it in there, this proverbial trailer. And are we good with moving forward and unhooking it and just being ourselves and doing the best we can to continue the tradition? If things don't go well, it's our fault, you know, because we want to take ownership and accountability of it. And we don't want things from the past hanging on. So that's the biggest thing, is just to move forward in a positive way and be our own leaders the best we can, because we're not kids anymore. And we have to show that we're responsible, that we want to make the business better, and that we're communicating as a team to show to the other non-family members that we're serious and we want what's best for the company. So we want to be a good example. So that's kind of the unhooking the trailer thing that I was talking about, is just taking that weight off. Another thing that we put in the trailer was those expectations from previous generations is like, hey, don't mess it up. And it's like, that's a big statement to make. No one's trying to mess anything up ever, right? Like, we all want to keep our job, and it's not all on our shoulders. We have, again, 120 other employees that we absolutely rely on. We love, we want to create a good culture for them. We want to be healthy. And that's the side, that's the healthy side I'm talking about. There's the smart side, which is the numbers, and then the healthy side, which is the interpersonal relation stuff. So that's what we're trying to balance that. It's funny because we just had a meeting, our next generation group, literally before this, and we're talking about the structure of this meeting that we want every month. Like, what are we calling it? You know, we know it's important to not just, you know, have lunch together and be surface. We need to get into like the meat and potatoes of stuff. And one of the biggest things is like, don't wait for things to build up. If there's a challenge, get it out there. Be understanding that there's a difference between a question and questioning. So like, I just have a question. I'm not doubting your skill set, you know, just things like that. So this was literally our first meeting that we kind of are trying to figure out how do we want to run it, because it's, we have the freedom to be able to do that. And we want to make sure it's a, you know, time sensitive. And each week we're going to try, and if there's something we need to put in the trailer, we're going to throw it in there and then like unhook it every month, because there's things that are always going to build up. So that's what we talked about. And it's really just getting that first step of like, okay, what's on my mind right now that I need to let go of, that it's just kind of been building up. And it's, there's nothing specific right now other than like, there's always going to be some conflict and people misunderstand each other, and then just clearing it up. Most of the time it's so simple. It's just like, oh, I didn't know that, whatever it is, and just clearing it up before it gets bigger. So that's our goal. As a company group, we do a lot of Patrick Guancioni meeting structure, and that's kind of a good foundation for us, how we communicate with each other. And his methods have been very helpful for us. What I also suggested is that we read books together, or what they suggested is Audible, because they don't want to read. So that's fine too. Either read it or do Audible. So the book that I picked is, that I listened to on my way across the country recently, is Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. And it's super just mental toughness. Yeah, just very inspiring, like super mental toughness stuff that we can bring to each other, and a lot of accountability stuff that's very helpful.
Is everybody on the team willing and open to talk about the same book?
I mean, I think that's an extra of this meeting that we're doing. The biggest thing is get ahead of any conflict. That's our main goal. The biggest step, first step, is everyone has made the commitment to do that. And really, the motivating factor for us is not just to maintain our relationships, but again, for the 120 people that they want to see the family getting along. It doesn't have to be perfect. And even though we're seven, you know, we're like day to day, we don't really tip the scale of like productivity of the business. We are kind of a barometer of the culture and the attitude. And
I think that's so true for family businesses in general.
So we want to maintain that, and for it to be real and not to be artificial, you know, harmony. We want it to be, have substance to it, and do the best we can to maintain that.
I love that term, artificial harmony, because it's so easy to create.
Yeah, I know. And I definitely, I'll give the Lencioni crew credit for that, because that's the scale is like, you know, the artificial harmony. And on the other scale is like attacking criticism. You know, being somewhere in the middle is obviously always the ideal spot. So learning how to have constructive criticism. God rest my Uncle Herb's soul. I love it. I loved him so much. But anytime we would, you know, talk about anything, family or tears would just start rolling. And that's just how he was. He was this empathetic, sensitive, loving man. And that's how my dad is. That's, you know, so we, there's nothing wrong with being sensitive. It's just having to navigating that in an appropriate way in a business setting. So it's a challenge for us sensitive folk.
Totally. I think that's a big challenge for how the business world is evolving, because these conversations, and I want to ask you about vulnerability in a minute, because I know you guys have talked about that too. But as these things come up, how do you be an incredibly empathetic person, which is such a huge talent and skill that you can bring to anything you do and make it work in a business setting. And so what has to flex? The person has to flex, but also probably the future of how businesses are run also have to flex if we want to take advantage of those strengths in people, which is really hard to figure out how to do.
Right. I'm happy that I'm seeing the trend head towards more of the healthy side, because I think people are realizing how much mental health plays in business. People are more comfortable talking about it and talking about how they're feeling, really. And I think it's important. Like, that's being vulnerable. And it's tough sometimes in a male-dominated ag industry, which is the reality of what this is, and getting people more comfortable just saying, hey, letting their egos go and saying, hey, I messed up. That's the best thing for me to hear personally and for me to do. Right. And it's tough for me too. Like, oh man, I really messed up on there. I'm sorry. Let's move on. And sometimes it's just so simple. It is so simple. It's just tough for humans to do.
Jennifer, I want to ask you, you had said you guys are just starting this process of committing to bringing conflict to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And for everyone listening that is also in a family business going, yeah, that's a great idea. How do you get started with a family that hasn't done this before to commit to bringing conflict to the table?
So it's okay. So I do really think it's important to have an independent non-family member, i.e. a consultant, to start those conversations, or just anyone who doesn't have or isn't affected by the situation, whatever the situation is. So that just to start the conversation. And one of the best things I heard many years ago with one of our consultants was, you know what, we can talk all day long and beat around the bush, but you have to name it to be able to tame it. So just say what it is. And I'm not going to get into like the specifics of it in our conversation today, but you have to get directly to it. Name what the issue is, which is what we were able to do in our previous meeting. There was a conflict. Someone named it, talked through it, and we figured it out as a group. And it's like, okay, we can do this. It's okay. So we just have to keep practicing, because it's easy to get away from it. And my dad's still around. He's retired, but he checks in often. He always is in my ear, you know, like, are you guys talking? Are you guys, you know, and I'm always like, yeah, Dad, we went to lunch. We're fine, you know. And he's a good barometer. He can really read the room, and he can feel when things are not right. A lot of times I don't want to burden him with stuff, but at the same time, he's gone through some stuff. He's tough enough to help guide. He's self-admittedly not the best communicator, but he knows what we need to do as the next generation to keep going. So he keeps kind of like poking, like, are everything okay? Okay, yeah.
That's so beautiful. That's the value of having that next generation or the older generation around.
Yeah.
Being able to play that role. That's so
right.
Cool.
Yeah, because there's a lot of trust and a lot of faith that things will work out if we keep working hard and keep focusing on the right things.
Does that give you faith?
It does. It does.
Speaking of vulnerability and the importance of communication, I want to talk a little bit about the dynamic that you faced more recently with a younger cousin of yours becoming your manager. Can right. you tell us a little bit about that, how that decision was made and how you felt about it going through it?
Yeah, it was something that was, I could see was in the making, and kind of the path that I was taking was more specific to branding and social media and everything. And it's its own little box, I guess. And we'd built a team, like a branding and customer team together. And I saw my cousin really stepping up and being very professional. And he just has the right demeanor for that management role. And I saw it happening, and I'm happy for it. You know, as odd, I mentioned to you sometimes, you know, it's like you have all these, you know, the shared history together. Like, when we were younger, I was, you know, I took him to see Zoolander at the movie theater, and he still remembers that. It was like, he's like my little buddy that I took around. And so I'm ecstatic for him, because I can see him growing in the business. And, you know, but at the same time, like, my, you can't deny that it's sometimes odd where it's like, oh, okay, our dynamic is changing. I'm going to check in with you. We're going to do one-on-ones. And it's all in all, it's been good. I had a conversation with him recently and just saying, hey, you know, basically I knew this was coming and I'm so happy for you. And I want our relationship to be, you know, just, I was just very specific. I want to maintain our relationship, but also be professional at the same time. And please be open to telling me there's something not right and what feedback or whatever. And so just trying to be explicit about really making that effort to be business focused and to let go of that, you know, that little kid, because we're grown up now, finally. I mean, sometimes people would say I'm not, but, and within the family, you know, my next generation dynamic, there's been two of the cousins that have kind of moved into managerial roles with some family members under them, you know, on the organizational chart. And it was not surprising at all. It was communicated well with HR, with upper management, with everybody. We sat down, everybody looked at the org chart. It just made sense. Bill, the CEO, cannot handle 10 direct reports. It's just too much. It makes sense for flow, personalities, everything. But I would just say just the importance of every time that's a pretty major change, right? Just over-communicate. And I feel like it was communicated well with us. And it's just, but I think a lot of times it's difficult for that cousin group to say, okay, things have changed. How are we changing now? You know, it's like, we just kind of went with it and it's been fine. But I think it's important for us I brought it up in our meeting today. Hey, things are different now. We're different levels on the org chart. And everybody knows that. We just haven't really verbalized it within the group, you know?
Yeah. Well, it is a hard thing to name. It's so funny. It's so simple. But also, at what point do you say that out loud unless you actually really intentionally do it?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Jennifer, do you remember, even though you saw it coming, you knew it was happening, you knew your cousin was up for it, how did you get through that, the ego part of you that had to, it for a moment, just be like, oh, there's someone below me going above me, you know?
Right.
How did you deal with that?
I would say someone on the same, like, we were like kind of all like flat, right? On the same org line. So I wouldn't say it.
Not someone below you, but someone younger than you.
Yeah, younger, yeah. I just trusted that it was the right decision and really tried to focus on, again, staying in my lane and doing the best I can with my role and not trying to, a lot of times in the past, I've tried to, you know, solve other people's problems or perceived problems. So I just really tried to do the best I could in my lane and communicate with the team. We've got a great team. We have a lot of fun doing social media stuff. Everyone has a lot of great ideas. And my cousin, who's my manager now, always checks in and has great ideas and sends me stuff. Oh, we should do this or whatever. So I just went with it, I guess. And again, it made sense to me. I wasn't ever really fighting it. I was just kind of like, okay, this is where we're headed. There has to be some sort of dynamic change because not everything can always be like decided as a harmonious team. There has to be, it just would take forever to get stuff done, just logistically.
Do you think it would have been harder if you were younger? I mean, do you think there's a certain amount of maturity that allows you to go through that? Or is it just part of you that's always kind of been able to maybe be more practical about business decisions like that?
It might have been harder if I was younger. I'm not sure. I just want to keep seeing the business move forward and whoever fits in those roles. And I'm part of that too, right? I'm not completely on the outside looking in. I'm definitely, you know, being on the board, it's nice for me to know what's going on in the bigger picture, like that 30,000 foot view. And I feel like I can wear that hat appropriately and make good decisions for the owners and what makes sense for the business. But yeah, I mean, it made sense.
If there were other people in your shoes going through that, what kind of advice would you give them?
Going through what?
Going through a situation where maybe a younger cousin or a younger sibling is climbing the ranks and suddenly there's a different reporting structure that they have to accept.
My advice would be, if you have any trepidation with the decision, if I truly was not happy with that transition or that change, I would have voiced something like, I don't think this is the right choice. I would have felt comfortable saying that. And if there is just to discuss it, if there's some questions that are up in the air, like, okay, what are the new roles of that? You know, just being explicit with who's doing what.
Clarity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, let's talk about Camp Carrier.
Sure.
So you were a founding member of Camp Carrier. Yes. So tell us what that is and how it began.
Oh, boy. I think it started in 2013, I believe. We're on our 10th year. Well, yeah. It was a suggestion from another family member that doesn't work in the business saying, I have all these great memories of growing up in that area. My kids are in the city. I really want them to be able to have those experiences. And let's do a camp. And this was just kind of casually at a gathering. I was like, okay, do you want just a babysitting service for your kids, or do you really want them to have experience? And it was genuine.
Fair question.
Yeah, it was genuine. And it was something we had been thinking about for a while too, just because I grew up in that area. I've got great memories of doing produce stands and picking gardens and getting dirty and all that stuff that goes along with the country. And one of the things that we'd heard at a family business thing was your chances of continuing the family business are greatly increased when there's shared experiences, right? It's just kind of like that's that foundation. And I have that with my current cousin group. Again, we've done a lot of fun things together. We know each other very well, but there's still a lot that we need to learn about each other and be okay with some of the conflict stuff, which will always arise. So work in progress, right? So creating those shared experiences, that was our main goal. So we put a committee together. I think there was about 5 of us together. And I look back at my notes recently. It's like, oh my gosh, we put a lot of work into this. It was just, detailed from minute to minute what's going on. We moved these 20 kids from house to house for 3 nights, and it was a lot. It was a lot of stuff. It was great. And one of the main things was picking the garden. That my dad's big tradition is planting a garden. So the kids went and picked the garden. My husband built a veggie stand out of wood, which is like super rustic, like barn wood. And the kids took turns selling the produce. So we had them do advertising and signs and everything. So, and then lots of pool parties and going to the office and introducing themselves to all the employees and icebreakers and all that stuff. So it was a lot of work. So over the years, we've kind of pared it down a little bit just because it's a lot of work. And we kind of landed recently on a Thursday and a Friday situation. So it doesn't take up people's weekends. We can still get those same real, going in the back of a truck is one of their favorite things. Swimming in the ditches and getting just absolutely filthy. But just those little things that don't take a lot of time, but still are core memories. My grandma was really into quilting when she was around. Both my grandparents lived to be 100 years old. And one of the things that she would do is do a lot of quilting. And so that's a tradition we do. So whatever the theme is of camp, each of the campers make a square of that theme and we put it all together. And so we have 10 quilts, paper quilts, hanging out. And every year I ask my mom, do you have those quilts at your house? Or are they, it's like, down because it's like we put at the end of camp, everything gets put away. And it's like, it's either at one of two places and just trying to gather again. But this year our theme is the search for the golden walnut. So it's like a treasure hunt. My Uncle Herb was really into scavenger hunts and very obscure. Like I could never figure them out as a kid. I'm like, what is it about? But it's very memorable. I just remember following people around all the time. Like, where are we going? But it was just, I was part of the experience, but I never understood what was going on. So we're going to have a bonfire on Thursday. And then, so that's just for everybody to be able to get together. All the kids get their t-shirts because we get t-shirts made. Everyone usually gets put into teams and they name their team.
So how many people come now?
Oh man, I think there's going to be, I want to say last time I looked at the list, there was 25 to 30 campers. Some people come from Connecticut, Colorado, and they make their vacation around it, which is super special. And I'm so happy that they want to have those experiences. So like the word is out that it's fun, which is good. That was always my hope. That was always the initial team's hope. And it's cool. I'm just proud that we were able to create those experiences and those memories for a lot of cousins that most likely wouldn't have been able to spend much time together just because of distance.
Do you think it engages people more in the family business?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of my cousins, like from an early age, was like, yeah, I'm going to be the CEO of Cary Family Farms. So, you know, he was very focused on it and like still talks about it. Like, hey, bud, you're passionate about it. Please come on board. It engages them. Like if some of the kids are super into, they get tractor rides and all that stuff. And so they've gotten a good idea of what goes on. I think we try to give it like anything that's new. We try to show them, for example, the new chiller that we put in last year. We give them a tour and give them a good overview of what's going on and the scale of it.
Jennifer, why do you choose to work at your family's company?
Because I want to play a part in continuing to make it better. You know, my dad was on a tractor a lot of his career. And I remember him coming home with dirty boots. And I know he put in a lot of time and a lot of work. And the dynamic of it has changed since he's been there. But he's very passionate about it. And I don't want to necessarily do it just for him. I want it to be for me as well. But I respect what he's done and what everyone else has done to get us this far. So I want to be a part of moving us forward as much as I can do. Just, again, in my lane and how much I can affect the business. So that's really, I just want to see it succeed and do the best I can to play a part in it.
Do you see yourself staying in the branding part, or do you have aspirations to do something else within the company?
Currently, I feel most comfortable branding, marketing situation. I like it, helps me be able to express my creativity and, you know, have a little bit of fun, but also pretty organized as well. So it helps me like come up with my own plans. We haven't really had this position until 5 years ago, right? So I want to prove to myself and others that it's an important aspect of the business. And so I want to do the best I can to learn. I taught myself how to edit videos over the last few years, and with the help of a consultant in social media, being able to kind of step up that game a little bit, because it's important with the next generation. That's how they get all their information, whether the older gen gets it or not. That's just part of it.
And that's a good question. How do you explain the value of marketing and social media to the older generation?
That's been the challenge, right? Like, hey, why do we need this? I don't know. What's this stuff? You know, what's this computer Facebook stuff? Like the way I ended up kind of selling it, or just, I really see a value in our monthly. We have shipping and marketing videos that we do. We used to do letters, but we've transitioned to videos that we sit down with our sales manager and our business development manager. And it coincides with where the Walnut shipping report comes out. And so they're talking about how's it going, you know, just generally like what's going on in the business. And then we talk to our farm manager about what's going on in the orchards. And we've got a lot of good feedback from customers that, hey, it's nice to see faces to what's going on and see what the crop is looking like. So I think that's been a benefit, especially when we get some feedback from the customers. So our goal is to be 90% business and 10% goofy.
That's cool.
And also one of my biggest things when we did the social media kind of relaunched and kind of focused on it was to be authentic, because I can't, that's my biggest pet peeve is when people are just whatever, following trends or being forced. I just want it to be us. And that was my goal. So
that's beautiful. And I think so important, especially in ag. It's so much of our roots are, and I think a lot of people are wanting that back to the basics approach for their own life. So those of us who still have our connection to the roots of ag life and earth and farming, and it's a really special and beautiful story, but it's extremely transparent if you're not doing it authentically.
Exactly.
It's not, yeah, you like, are. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's where I feel like I have a pretty good, I don't claim to know like all the ins and outs of the family business or anything, but I feel like I have a pretty good generation and I have a pretty good perspective of things that I've seen it grow over the last few years. So I feel like I can tell the story pretty well. And that's what I like that part of the social is telling a story and introducing our employees and making them feel important. And they are important and highlighting them. That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's awesome to feel connected to a story you want to tell.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Jennifer, we have one last question that we ask everybody.
Okay.
It's, do you think the success of your family business has been due more to hard work or luck?
Hard work. I mean, that's the nature of farming, right? Is literally putting in the hours, getting your boots dirty, just to get us to this far, to be able to have the opportunities to keep growing. It's been a lot of hard work.
Awesome. Jennifer, I guess we'll let you go, but thank you so much. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I'm glad that worked out, and it was great to talk to you, and totally respect your family and your family businesses, and hope to collaborate some more in the future.
Yeah, thank you. I would love that.
Thank you for listening to A Seat at the Table, Trials and Triumphs of Family Business. If you like what you heard today, please be sure to subscribe, post a positive review, and share with another family business owner. For more information about the Capital Region Family Business Center, visit capfamilybus.org. That's capfamilybus.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Capital Region Family Business Center and on Instagram at CapFamBiz, B-I-Z. If you know of other family businesses that have a story to share, please contact Stella Primo, show producer and executive director at S-Primo, P-R-E-M-O, at CapFamilyBus.org. We're grateful for the support of River City Bank to make this program possible. And special thanks to Guy Raz from How I Built This for a wonderful closing question that's become one of our favorites.
Hi, this is Steve Fleming of River City Bank, and we're proud to bring you the Capital Region Family Business Center podcast series.